I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the CollectingCast.com podcast with Chris Harris and Edward Lovett.
Hello and welcome to another Collecting Cars podcast. This is me, Chris Harris, at Harris Monkey. I'm with at Edward Lovett, Edward Lovett. And we are having one of our little market updates. And also to remind you that some other stuff going on in Collecting Cars, there is now a video channel. Edward's taking over the world. Sam Hancock is presenting some fantastic content over on the YouTube channel, so look for the Collecting Cars YouTube channel and also on the main site, where of course you'll now be browsing for amazing secondhand interesting vehicles that you can bid on. But rather than having a special guest today, Edward and I are catching up in his G-Wagon outside the Pheasant Pub near Hungerford, which we do now and again, because there's so much going on in the world of cars, we thought we'd have a bit of a catch-up. And then, coming up, we've got some great podcasts in the next 3 or 4 weeks. I know we're a bit sporadic with these things, but you know what? Sometimes you have to wait for quality. Let's start with the world of used cars and market values, because I think we're looking into the face of a tsunami at the moment. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's tough, and it's changing, and it's changing in front of our eyes. But there's some life out there. There's some business to be done.
What do you think is actually going on in the main volume areas of the interesting car business? So it's felt like we've been through a really joyous, successful, almost 7-8 year period now, where there's just been, you know, that people have become complacent when there's just this assumption that whatever they buy is going to go up in value. Cars are spoken of as much as assets that are going to look after you as they are motor cars that you should be out enjoying. Or, if you know, those of us have been around long enough know that there's basically a load of boxes you tick, and once they've all been ticked, everything's going to go shit-shaped. And it feels to me like we got there actually quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
And now we're in that bad place.
Yeah. You know, I know I haven't really owned many modern cars or new cars for a long time. And the chase over the last few years, you know, people changing every 6 months, have multiple new cars on order. You know, I think we said this last time that no one gives the car they've actually bought a chance to fall in love with it. And, you know, you should really own a car for 1, 2, 3, 4 years if you really love it. And people just, they've lost that. And now we're coming into a period where this little 6 month, 12 month change cycle is starting to cost an awful lot of money. An awful lot of money.
So what's happening? Are people wearing it? Yeah, we need some window, don't we? Yeah, but with your G-Wagon, the sun's come out. This thing's basically a greenhouse. A very good greenhouse on wheels. Why don't we have the sunroof?
Oh, we could do the sunroof. Yeah, we'll do the sunroof. Yeah.
We get a bit of background.
We were in your M5 last time.
We were. So if you hear a bit of noise, sorry about that, but we need some air in here. So what do people do now? What are people doing? Are they wearing it and saying, okay, I've only had my 488 Spider for a month, and now you're trying to sell me an F8 Tributo? And then they're wearing it. And lower down in the marketplace, are they saying, I know there's a new M4 around the corner, M3 around the corner, but I've just spent 60 grand on this one, and I think I might just pass on that one.
Well, I think there's a big... there's a big disparity in how different people are coping with it. As we well know, we have a mutual person that's been through the Ferrari process recently that's sort of dipped his toe in, can afford the losses, but he is out of it now because he didn't expect the losses, but he could afford to take the loss. You know, there are other people in these deals that probably can't afford to take the loss, and they certainly can't afford to take it and roll into another potential loss. So people are going to have to stay in the cars, and if they want to sell them, they're just going to have to accept reality of what they're worth today.
But staying in the car is one thing, but you're stung, aren't you? And however wealthy you are,
mentally stung, is that what?
Yeah. However wealthy you are, I think there's an element of I'm not going to go back to that. You say at the time I'm never going back to that.
Yeah.
Because you always do. You do go back to it because you love cars, and there'll be something that once the pain has subsided, you'll think in 3 years' time, 2 years' time. But it could be that length of time I'll have another go, but
yeah,
for a while I think blokes are quite cyclical in their sort of passions. Like, I've got certain weaknesses. I like hi-fis, I like cars, occasionally like mountain bikes. I've basically got my boy hobbies that I'm willing to spend some of my disposable on.
Yeah.
And I go through phases, really. Sometimes I love cars, and then I might go quiet on cars for a bit, and I'll go into hi-fis, and it tends to go round and round. Cars have definitely dominated it far more than anything else, and I think a lot of blokes are like that. But all it takes is, you know, to have bought a 550 Maranello for 120 grand last year, and suddenly, you know, that car's now, what's that worth now? 60 grand.
Yeah.
And you've probably made the purchase by telling your significant other that you've only bought it because it's going to go up in
value. I think that's the
point. And then you said the whole, it's a bit of a house of cards. Yeah. And I think once you've assessed all of that, you just think, I'm not going there for a while. And that's really bad for our industry.
Yeah. That, you know, that is the difference. You know, people that bought some of these cars for some of the prices, that they were convincing themselves that this was a move. This wasn't, I want a 550 Maranello. It was manual gearbox, V12 Ferrari, this is a good move. Well, you know, you should be buying from the heart, not with the head.
Yeah, and we'll come to that later on. Edward's been very organised here. He's basically bought a list of... A sort of iPad list of things we should talk about.
That's my shopping list, though. You're on the wrong. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So when it says Corona, are you trying to buy beer or what?
Yeah, that's
so the first one says
one.
Corona impact. Now, I thought Jurgen Klopp's interview about I don't watch football at all, but I think he's an interesting character. His interview where he said, "Why would you listen to me? I'm a football manager. I know nothing about this disease. Ask someone that knows." I agree. I don't want to sit here and advise people. I have no idea what's going on with it. It's clearly quite scary. We're recording this on the 12th, is it, or the 11th today?
On the 11th.
This is the 11th of March, so I suspect by the time this goes out, it'll be a situation that will be worse, and it's rapidly evolving. But what effect is it going to have on the auction houses, on selling cars in general, the way they're retailed in the country? I think massive.
Well, just to go back to the last point you're talking about, this depreciation effect that people, you know, how long are they going to be out of the game for before they dare come back in and have another go at a front-engine V12 Ferrari or whatever the car may be, is the rapidly changing world that we're in anyway. You know, if they come out of this coma of depreciation in 5 years, will they be that fussed about owning a combustion engine car anymore, or will they be ordering a Tesla or a Taycan or something like that? You know, things are changing so quickly. Who would know?
Well, and also if they employ a load of people, do they want to turn up to work once a month in their fancy car, which will just make their employees hate them even more? Would have thought. I can see that. All right, you need to edit that back, whoever's on the edit, and get that to go back with the previous bit. So, the impact of this pandemic. What's the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic? I don't know.
I'm the same as the football coach. Okay. I know nothing.
So, but people don't want to go to public spaces. So auctions are going to be off for a while, aren't they? They've just, Essent, I gather,
physical auctions. Yes, they are.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So this is, well, we're not in any way blowing our own trumpets here, but it does seem that an online marketplace is quite a good idea at the moment. I mean, You think that there might be other viruses around the corner, don't you?
I didn't start.
Did you start this?
No. I think
I saw a bloke with thinning hair and a ginger beard in Wuhan province selling off bats. Was that you? Something rank dead bats.
Well, look, one thing that always happens with the motor industry, regardless of all the nonsense that we've had to deal with over the last 6 months with Brexit and elections, etc., is that, you know, summer ends, we come into the winter, some people want to sell cars, some cars go into hibernation. A lot of dealers decide to reduce their stock levels in December, so there's always some good deals to be had. And then in January, the signs of the market picking up come back, big dealer groups starting to buy stock again, and preparing for the spring market. Everyone gets a bit excited. I've got a road tour to do. I've got this. I've got that. There's this race event going on, Goodwood members meeting, for example. There's the classic car show in Essen. Or even the classic car.
That's just been delayed.
That's just been delayed, cancelled. But actually, only a few weeks ago, a lot of us were in Paris for the Retromobile. And the vibe at the Retromobile this year was, I would say, was pretty positive. The auction results were good. There was some dealers there with which Sam Hancock did a video for us on, which is on YouTube. You know, some amazing cars there, some decent sale results. No one realised what we were about to come into. And it's going to give the spring market a false start. And I'm pretty sure it's going to have a pretty drastic effect on the rest of the year's market.
Well, I think Italy's going to need some sort of bailout because the country's now in total lockdown. Again, this is out of my field of expertise, but I'm not a politician or a very clever person, but if no one's allowed to go out their door and go to work, you can't do that for very long before you've got problems. And actually, we have to make the point that within some of the human stories that are going to emerge from this, the car market actually means nothing because people's lives are going to be changed, but it will have an effect.
It will have an effect. It means nothing in terms of, do I need to buy a new Ferrari? Well, absolutely not. And I think that's the point, that, you know, the motor industry is a huge industry globally, and, you know, it might well have an effect on Ferraris and Lamborghinis in Italy or Fiat. We've got the Grand Prix in Melbourne this weekend, and already I hear from the press conference a couple of the Red Bull or one of the teams are down with the virus
and
already.
And they've just banned anyone coming from Italy.
They have they? Yeah. But Ferrari already there, so no one said that Ferrari are not going to be racing. You know, that will have a role on effect.
Could look like Indianapolis 2005 again, couldn't it, frankly? So, yeah. I mean, when they took the decision to go there, I had to say I thought, that's very brave. Yeah. But so there is, look, this terrible thing that's happening around the world is definitely going to affect it. Next thing on the list, Tesla.
Well, we don't have to talk about it in this order. I was just
I like the idea of looking at it because it's actually some logic and some order which I don't have in my brain.
So I'm going to take over here, Chris. I met someone very interesting this morning that works for Tesla in the UK. Oh, I think globally, actually. A really nice chap, you'll know who you are. And I also heard from a friend of mine in Holland recently that the tax law was changing at the end of December. So Tesla needed to deliver all of these Model 3s and X's and S's, etc. So the boat turned up to the port, unloaded thousands of Teslas. And effectively, he sort of said they put some easy ups in the middle of the port, got the keys out and said, right, the black ones are down there somewhere, the white ones are over there, blue ones are over there, there's the key. If you just sort of walk down the line and click, when the one opens, that's yours, get in it and drive off. And he told me that the owners were just all ecstatic about buying these cars in this sort of this fashion, which is so far away from what we know as sort of long-term car people going into huge showrooms and having the sort of flowers, coffee, champagne, congratulations, you've waited 2 years. Tesla's showing that the world's changing again very, very quickly.
I totally agree with you. There's an excitement around this new product, which means that people are focused on the product and don't give a monkey's about how they take delivery of it. I also think that the motor industry has made a massive mistake in building up the handover experience to be something that they thought the customer wanted, but I don't think the customer ever really wanted it. You know, when you go into a showroom and you get given a very fancy cup of coffee by a very beautiful woman, and then someone spends an hour telling you where the rear window heater is, it's just not necessary. It's a nice experience, but I'm not sure it fits with the modern world. When you were BMW in the mid-70s and you were doing what? Out of your showroom, you were doing, if you were lucky, 3 cars a week, it made sense because it was that kind of luxury item, but it's not now. Also, there's precedent for the way people focus on the product, and when they do that, you get things like Bicester Village, don't you? So if you can either go to the one on Bond Street, the Gucci shop on Bond Street, and pay a load of money and have the experience, or you can go up to Bicester Village and buy the stuff that's half the price, but it's the product you want. You're willing to put up with, frankly, and nothing against Bicester here, but you're willing to go to Bicester Village to do it.
Is that where you got your gucky handbag from?
I haven't got a gucky handbag. I might get a set of cheapy loafies for the summer though. So I totally agree. They're blowing the model apart. I've spoken to some of my friends who know far more about the Tesla stock price and where Tesla's going as a company, because the market capitalization still makes no sense to me.
Are they more valuable than Mercedes now, I think I was told this morning?
Well, I think they are, yeah. They're more valuable than Ford at the moment, aren't they? I just... It's an incredible business, and it can only tell us a couple of basic things, I think. First of all is the fact that Tesla is in possession of an infrastructure and a bunch of technologies that everyone else is really struggling to respond to. And second of all, that the car industry and the way that cars are retailed was open to total disruption.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. And the UK place is amazing. The UK place looks like the rental return place on a location for a particularly scummy rental place, and they just don't give a monkey's, because all they're trying to do is get the metal out the door.
Yeah.
And the people are so desperate to take delivery, they just couldn't give a monkey's. As you say, you walk up and it's like, that's yours there, the red one.
But they're also, there's like a handful of options. You know,
there's not much you can do with it.
Different colour leather, two different colour leathers, tow bar or not. And so they sort of, you know, if you order one and it's sort of coming through and the guy can't take delivery, you just take it.
Yeah. No, they don't worry at all. The only bit that I struggle with is that the build quality is terrible.
But I've written here, they're disposable. You know, people are not buying them in the same way.
I know they're not, but I still think, and I know that it's not a £50,000, £60,000 purchase. It is a, you know, 10 grand down and then whatever a month. But I struggle with, that's still the second biggest purchase anyone's going to make, any household's going to make. It's a house than a car. You're not spending more money than that on anything else. And just be quite nice if there's a bit of care went into it. Like, we had one last week, and the trim, they've put this bloody chrome trim line down the outside of it, and it just doesn't meet up anywhere. Yeah. And that would and does great with me.
This won't be excusable, but they probably, if they cared that much, they already wouldn't be in business.
Absolutely.
They're putting their place in the market now, and hopefully for them, maybe it will be too late once Mercedes, Porsche, VW, etc. start rolling out sort of cheaper Taycans and electric Macans, etc.
But if I'm doing the simple debit and credit in my head of owning one, on the one hand, yes, the lack of care that's gone into assembling it worries me. I don't like it. But the upside is the Tesla supercharger network. And if I was looking to buy one, would the supercharger network positivity outweigh the build quality? Absolutely, yes. Just they're so far ahead, and I just don't see how the other's going to catch up at the moment. I was one of these ones that 18 months ago was saying, oh, you wait till the Taycan arrives, you wait till the VW what arrives. But VW about to, you know, splurge this new electric vehicle at us in the next few months. But there's just no infrastructure in this country to support it.
Yeah.
So I think maybe the markets have got Tesla right. I know lots of people that short Tesla as a sport. They're not looking so clever at the moment, are they? So, okay, we'll move on. I'm going to go to, you've written too many cars, too much.
Oh, you've skipped one of them.
We're going to go back to that in a minute.
Navigating the way. You actually tweeted the other day. I'm not sure if any of you have been bothered reading the 30-something page document that someone in America wrote about the Ferrari stock price.
Yeah.
But it was a very relevant piece of reading. I thought you battled your way through the whole
document. It was pretty hard going, and it was difficult not to draw the conclusion it was written by an embittered Ferrari customer who had had a bad experience probably in the last year with Ferrari. But be that as it may, once you could discount the personal element to it, it was a very interesting document that just confirmed, I think, everything that a load of us have suspected.
Yeah.
So a lot of these brands, but after you've deconstructed all the accounts and all the other clever stuff that people with big foreheads do, they exist because they're special, And if you make too many of them, they stop being special.
Yeah.
And at that point, you've got some very interesting decisions to make. And I think Ferrari is a really good example. You know, De Montezemolo is without a doubt the most impressive CEO of a car company I've ever met in my life. Partly because he was so charismatic. When he walked into a room, you just went, fuck me, he's a god. You know, no, excuse the French, but he genuinely made you go, he's special. And he used to make some pretty bold statements. And the one that he made was, you know, Ferrari has to stay below 7,000 cars a year to stay special. And it wasn't a number he just plucked out of the ether.
Yeah.
He knew through his 20 years at the company, he knew, whatever it was, more than that, he knew that's the volume at which Ferrari had to stay if it was to remain special. And I think we're seeing that now, that, you know, Ferrari's pressures are based around...
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Keeping shareholders happy. It's now in the luxury goods business. And it has to, you know, and like anything that's now beholden to the market, unless it grows year on year, it's deemed to be a failure. I mean, that's the only bit about capitalism that I don't really understand, is that unless you can't be static, you have to keep making more and more than the year before. Otherwise, you're deemed a failure. That seems oxymoronic to me. So poor old Ferrari is now left trying to flog too many cars, which is going to hurt its reputation. I'm absolutely state here, I don't want Ferrari to be in trouble. It's one of the joys in my life, Ferrari. Yep. I love what they do. I love the people that work there. I love going there. There's no more special place on the planet. I love everything to do with the brand. I really do. I've had my arguments with them in the past because they've been wankers in the past. But, like, you expect them to be. If Ferrari weren't being wankers, I'd be disappointed.
Yeah.
Because they're great. I love the confidence, the chutzpah of the place. But... you know, at the moment, it's a different car every bloody week. They're not quite as bad as McLaren.
But they will be finding out. They'll know this before the dealers knew it. But the model they've built over the last few years is not sustainable anymore, because a guy orders a 488 Coupe and then the Spider and an 812 and an 812 GTS so we can get X, Y, and Z. You know, they can't sustain the depreciation. The buyers don't want to deal with the depreciation. And if they're not ordering those next cars that come through, then where's the order bank going to get built? And I think I was saying to you earlier on that, you know, Ferrari really want new customers to buy the Roma, but the new customers don't exist because they're in PCP deals on Bentleys, Astons, McLaren 600LTs, Audi R8s, Mercedes AMG GTs, or they're still stuck in their 488 Spiders, etc. Just aren't enough customers.
As we discussed, what a place to be stuck. I love a 488 Spider.
I'll just
stick with it and stay with it. But one stat I'd love to know that you'll never find out is, if Ferrari makes, I don't know what its volume is this year, it's 10,000 or more, isn't it, this year? I can't remember. But if Ferrari makes, let's say, 10,000 cars a year, how many actual new customers does it have? How many customers buy those 10,000 cars?
About 5,000.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I was told by a big UK-based dealer that he was talking me through the 300 plus new car orders they've got in their system at the moment. The volume of those orders are people that have got four or more cars on order.
And do you know what, we have to be clear, it's not just Ferrari that's got that problem. They've all, you know, Aston's got the same problem, and you could argue the McLaren's probably further down the road of having that problem. They've all got the same problem, but for some reason Ferrari is the jewel in the crown. And I think, you know, this phrase, too big to fail, I'm not saying that they are in an imminent danger. Of course they're not. But they're the one that you'd think, well, they're not going to get this wrong, are they? But it seems like they've been drawn into it as well.
Mm.
Here we go. This is a Zinger. How do you pronounce it?
I was probably wrong.
Zinger. This 3D printed thing
named after a chicken burger from KFC, I think.
Okay. Yeah. good cultural reference there, Edward. You've never had one of those, have you?
No.
You've probably had one by Gordon Ramsay with his name that he's stamped on the side of it.
No, I wrote that down because they did a bit of a media launch, didn't they, in LA a few weeks ago. Might have been more than that now. And then announced that they were coming to Geneva just at the time, whilst they were flying everyone over from California, that Geneva was cancelled. And what they did is a sort of a team building exercise as they built their full stand, which looked amazing. And I like what they did around that. But I find it very interesting. It's a 3D printed car. It's a new way of doing things.
Yeah, I
on the different end of a spectrum from Tesla, I guess.
I've got a lot of cynicism around that part of the market. I just think there's too many of these bloody stupid hype cars that never get used. But that one is one that my ears picked up to and went, I love the idea. It's a new process. It's clearly got a lot of expertise behind it. They're not going to make many cars. I suspect they'll sell every single one. It's dead impressive. I mean, I think they've got a bit sucked into the influencer loop of doom, haven't they, and ended up sort of in Shoreditch and all that sort of stuff, but I don't think that'll damage them at all. It just looks like a really interesting product, and they did reach out and say, do you want to go and see it, but sadly I was busy. Hopefully at some point I'll get to drive one. Just looks like a very high quality product, doesn't it?
It's the start of something.
I agree. The 3D printing thing is fascinating because, you know, the component quality I presume is off the dial, but I don't know. Just hope that they are, you know, that the process delivers the strength that you need in those components, because the thing's got 1500 horsepower, hasn't it, or something like that. So it's going to be going quite quick.
Now, I've got a few more things written down here. We're going to finish this podcast on a positive note. Yeah. Please bear with us, but we're throwing a few things out there just to get everyone getting everyone thinking.
So, next one, here we go. So, that roof thing. The roof rodeo. Now, because I do a bit of work with Singer, I shouldn't really be commenting on Alois Roof's activities, but I can because, you know what, I've been doing this a long time and I've loved everything they've ever done, and the Yellowbird is on my list of cars one day I want to own because it's sensational. And the rodeo thing, initially, I saw it and just thought, do you know what, this Safari 911 fad needs to end. We've got too much of it now. We've got Lee Keane doing his amazing cars. We've got Tuttle been doing it for years. Everyone is trying to make a 911 into a bloody Range Rover. But, big but, 700 horsepower with those telltale intakes over the rear, tops of the rear wings, go anywhere. I mean, it's just cool as shit, isn't it?
It is so cool. And the reason I said what I said earlier on was, you know, we're talking about some of the negatives of the modern cars. You know, I guess that car's going to be $1 million or pounds or euros or whatever. They're going to sell all of them and more. You know, it's so cool.
Strange, isn't it? We just had a bite to eat. And why is it that the moment I saw that thing, I thought, as long as they only want to make whatever, somewhere between 50 and 100 of those, they'll sell every single one. But when I saw the McLaren Elva, I just thought, not a chance, guys. No one's going to be bothered. Is it because one's actually got a windscreen and the other one hasn't? Or do we just think that there's something believable about that car? You can see someone actually buying it to use it.
Very much so, yeah. And that's where, you know, Singer's success is. But, you know, it's not sold to speculators. It's sold to people that genuinely want that car. Yeah. You know, an Elva or a SP2 or whatever. You know, I don't think anyone's been dreaming of the next Ferrari that doesn't have a roof or a windscreen or a McLaren that doesn't have a roof an Aston Martin.
Well, I talked about those boxes that you tick, and once you've ticked the last one, the lineup of doom, the last one, if they're called the bullshit boxes, the last one is when you start launching cars that you can't use.
Yeah.
When everyone's building cars, when the ideas box is so empty that you're scraping around the bottom with your fingernails going, oh, I know what, we'll make a car you can't fucking use.
Yeah.
It's like, well, of course it's going to go wrong, isn't it? No one wants there's SP2s. I know the wonderful Power Slide lover who I love. He's a wonderful chap, and boy, can he drive. But he's the only person in the world that'll ever use the bloody thing. He's the only one that can drive it probably. So I love all that stuff, but it's not sustainable. Whereas, weirdly, a 911 on stilts built in Germany that's got a load of power probably is.
Yeah.
Next
it's
one.
A cool
Here
thing.
We go. This is interesting. So, at the moment, there aren't many safe havens for people that buy expensive cars. I think everything feels like it's at risk. And I know there's too many expensive cars in this conversation. We're going to move it down market in a minute. So I've asked Edward what his safe havens are. What does he think? And I suppose by asking what a safe haven is, you're asking him to define the absolute icons of the supercar market, because they're the only ones that you want to put your money into right now. Go on.
Yeah, you know, this is not all, you know, that yes, they're all cars, but this is not just about them being cars anymore. You know, they are like owning a piece of art on the wall.
Yeah.
And I think the Ferrari F40 is that car. There are a few more, but for me, that is the car. I think Carrera GT is there in some form.
Yeah.
I think 275 GTB Ferrari, short wheelbases, you know, right at the top end GTOs. They're pretty well protected, McLaren F1, from what is going on in the world, because the right people buy them, produced in small numbers, and they're not just buying them because they think they're going up in value. They buy them for the right reasons,
yeah,
and that is what ultimately protects their value.
It's quite rarefied territory there. That's not available to most of us. So,
well, I'll give you. Sorry, one of my team went to Historics Auctions for a no reserve Peugeot 1.6 GTI,
yeah,
that was being sold.
Did it have a sunroof or not?
And it didn't. It was black. It was right-hand drive.
Without a sunroof.
36,000 miles.
No,
and your mate, Vicky Butler-Henderson, was actually auctioning the car at the time. So he went out there, sorry, Rohan, thinking, this is going to come for $2,000. And I've got an insurance quote. It's going to cost me another 250 quid a year too. So Vicky, first car she'd ever auctioned. I'm opening up here with an absentee of £10,000. It waited there for 3 hours. Ascot race course with the average age of about 70 years old, tyre kicking. And it sold for $18,500. You know, this was a black 1.6 GTI,
must have been
35,000 miles, you know, look like new. So there are people out there that will pay incredible money for the best of the best. Still.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's a GTO, it can be a GTI.
I agree. I still think,
going back to our first ever podcast, from GTI to GTO.
GTI, I think GTO. So I still think that this isn't about how much the car is necessarily. This is about the reasons that you're buying the car. And this,
yeah,
comes back to why we want to end on a positive note, because actually, as long as you want a car for the correct reasons, i.e. you want to own it, to cherish it, to have a relationship with it, to keep it for a long time, for it to become part of your family, the value of the car doesn't necessarily matter. It's what it costs you to buy. If you can afford to buy it, then that's all that really matters. It's what you're willing to pay for it on the day. And I've got some stuff that I've bought over the years. Some of it owes me the wrong money. Some of it owes me the right money. I have a Mercedes W124 320 Sportline convertible that my good friend Richard Tuttle always asks me for what he calls the Merc update every year. Because I think I paid $16,000 for it in 2006. So I paid too much money for it, and it wasn't a very good car. And I won't say where I bought it from, because the remedial work required to make it even a half-decent car has cost me a lot of money over the years. We think, I've done the maths, it stands me in at $48,000 now in restoration, servicing, stuff going wrong, and just sort of throwing, you know, you throw $2,000 at it a year, don't you? And it must do about 50 miles a year. But I'll never sell it, because I want one.
Unless you offer him $48,000.
Yeah. I know, I got a trade bid of $8,000 for it last year. Right? But I just don't care, because it's you know, I can afford it. I've worked hard. I can afford it. It's not my Ferrari. But it is, it's a thing I want to keep. And so I just don't really mind. I bought it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
I didn't buy it because I thought it was going to go up in value. I bought it because it's a four-seat Ferrari that's utterly, four-seat Mercedes that's utterly dignified. And is now, it's like a fifth limb, frankly, because it's been with me for so long. So I think we're now getting into the territory of, the reset means the market's going to go down. Hopefully people will start buying cars they want now. That's what I think. As long as it's not crazy money, like that $18,000 205 GTI. Okay, so Rohan, who I've not met, but I'll look forward to meeting you, Rohan, because you sound like my kind of gutsy punter. He's probably a little bit naive to think that $2,000 would buy the car.
He spent too much time with me.
Yeah. So, but that $18,000 205 to me still seems like not bad value. It's someone has bought that car because they either had one back in the day and it was the best car they'd ever driven. Because I still feel that the first time I drove a 205 GTI...
Have you got one now?
No. I've got a fleet of XS and I've got two rallies. I haven't got a GTI because actually I prefer the others. But I remember the first time I got in a 205 GTI 1.6 as a kid. And you just started up and it had a very even idle with the fuel injection, a very distinctive idle, the way that the rev counter needle would sit just above between the 0 and the 1000. It was a very distinctive idle, that slightly empty sound from the exhaust back box. And the gear shift was so good. You just snuck first gear and you went to second and you couldn't believe how short the gear ratios were. Second to third, the engine note barely dropped and it was just instant punch.
Is the 1.6 the one to have?
Look, I vacillate on this. The 1.6 is a little bit sweeter. The handling is a bit sweeter. But the 1.9, there's something a bit angry about a 1.9 that I can go on. I've made arguments either way and people think that I'm inconsistent. But it's way, if you end up with a mint 205 GTI, for me it's more important whether it's got a sunroof or not. I'd have the car without the sunroof over the one that had...
From structural rigidity?
No, it's just a bloody... It's got this vacuum seal on the sunroof, the factory fit sunroof.
Yeah.
And they just... When you don't use them, they all... The rubbers perish, and then when you want to close it again, what happens is these two runners get stuck to the glass going forwards, and they fire forward like some shit bloody roof rack, and then it's very difficult to fix. So it's an ugly sunroof; it adds an inch and a half to the roof and everything. I just don't like them. So I can see why that car's worth 18. Why not? I mean, it's just joyous.
If you've got a great 205 GTI, please get in touch. We need to satisfy Rohan's needs to.
It needs to be on collecting cars. So I think, like any part of the economic cycle, there's two ways of looking at what we're about to go into now. It's either, oh God, doom and gloom, or it's, I'm going to get a F12 for 110 grand.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the latest, whatever it is, F80 M3 for 25 grand out the back door because the trader won't buy it. There's going to be absolutely amazing deals coming. I'll admit to one thing publicly. I have bought a BMW M2 competition because I had no intention of buying any new cars at the moment. The deals on them are pretty good, but also I was in one the other day and my 1M has got a bit too long in the leg now. I've used it too much and I want to put it away. This M2 competition, if you look at it dispassionately, is the new Sierra Cosworth, right? It's a two-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, compact saloon car that's got 400 horsepower out the factory. And if you even give the ECU the lightest tickle under the belly, it's 500 horsepower. But before you've even thought about it...
Is yours getting a tickle?
No, it won't be because it's a lease vehicle, so I wouldn't do that. But you've just got this incredible performance package. They're not that much money. They've got loads of deals on them. And it's a manual. And I just thought, if I don't have one of these now, I don't think I'll be offered that car in 3 years' time by a dealer. So I'm going to have one. So, yeah, M2 competition all day long.
I'd bought an automatic.
Would you?
Yeah.
You'd bought DSG?
Yeah, I'm lazy. When it comes to that, it depends what you're going to use it for.
Well, I'm going to use it for driving, Edward. If you want to, dearie me! I mean, there's no helping some people. Right? Mind you, you've still got a Harley Davidson with a personalised number plate, haven't you?
I don't anymore. The personalised number plate's off. I've still got the bike.
So I think there's rich picking. So what do you think is currently going to be quite good value? Let's go a bit lower down.
My advice coming into this period would be simple. Just accept what your cars are worth. If you don't want them, sell them. And then go and buy what you want to buy at today's money. It's, you know, it's a great opportunity. You know, if you fancy a BMW M2 competition, a used car that's 10% less than it was last year, then just take 10% less for yours and, you know, move on.
There will be inevitable stasis in the market when people have to slightly digest the fact that their cars have gone down in value. But as you say, if there's equivalent value out there,
there's only, we've written down here the outliers and the icons which we've talked about. There's only a handful of cars really that are going the opposite direction to everything else. You know, most things are following the same. You know, if the whole market's dropped 25%, then it doesn't really matter. You know, the cost to change is kind of the same.
My 512 TR, which has done 62 and a bit thousand miles now, I mean, he's basically an unsaleable vehicle.
It's just opening up now.
It's just
it?
Had a. I've never owned a car that's gone through the entire go up, go down cycle. So I bought it in 2012 for. I think I paid 50,000 for it, and it had 48,000 or 45,000 miles on it. It was already the highest mile. It was the one that everyone avoided and went, avoid that. And I think all the other ones were about 70, and I paid 50 for it. In that time, its value shot up to, I think someone offered me £150,000 for it about four years ago. It had been in that little film we did, and it had a great story. And also, being a high-mileage car, it runs so well. It's such a fast car. I think it's now worth about
49,950.
I think it's worth I think it's worth about 40 grand now. It's done 62,000 miles, and also because it's serviced at, by a dealership group whose surname is familiar with you, Edward. It's been serviced the right way by Ferrari Swindon and Matthew and the team. Obviously, the car has looked after brilliantly, and it's in great condition. But the bills, they ain't cheap. So actually, I've now spent more than the value of the car. Having it serviced over the time that I've had it. So, look, do you know what? I love the fact that actually that car's been through the full cycle. I've loved owning it. I still love owning it. It's great fun. It's cost me money, I know, but not tragically.
Yeah.
I could have sold it for a load of money and bought something else with it. But I probably would now be sitting here thinking, yeah, I think I'd like another 512. And, maybe I should have banked the money, waited, and then put 70 grand.
Bought
and
three of them.
Yeah, I know. but it's interesting to own a car that goes that far up and then comes crashing back down again.
Yeah.
So, look, there's lots of fun to be had out there. Do go and have a look at the YouTube channel. Watch Sam's work. He's a superb presenter. I'm not allowed to say that normally. I should be embittered because I've got another rival out there. But he's a bit good at that, and he's a fantastic driver as well. Go on to the Collecting Cars auction site. Have a good rootle around because there's some fantastic kit on there. It's getting more and more interesting.
I know you don't like me pitching too much of what we do, but you know, given the time we're in now, with our auction platform, you know, the car stays with you. You send us the photos, you send us the information, we curate it, put it up. You know, the car doesn't leave you until you've been paid. There isn't a better way to sell a car. It costs you nothing to list with us. You get 100% of the hammer price back. You know, do engage with us because we would love to help.
Yeah, I think so. I think your timing's right, but I think maybe this online auction platform might be onto something.
It might be, yes.
Okay, so we'll be back actually sooner than usual with some really, really good podcasts coming up. I'm pleased with the lineup. But for now, from the G-Wagon, somewhere near the M4, goodbye from myself and Edward Lovett. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.